Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property finance and money management. Welcome back to the couch.
Mate, always a pleasure to do this. This is my favourite part of the week, other than helping all the people that we do.
Yeah, oh, mate. Hey, I've just done a little bit of rearranging the deck chairs in the studio. Hey,
We're in a new little spot in the studio.
As the listeners would know, we've got the sound desk and we've got the property couch. And
You might hear someone in the background, one of our consultants, actually looking up to some clients here.
So, so we've moved into a nice little environment. So I like what you've done with the place, Ivers. Footy's over.
I know.
So you'll be getting excited, won't you, now? Because cricket season's winding.
No, trade period.
Cricket season's starting to...
No, who? You'd what? Be, crickets?
You'd be crickets. Excited to see the Ashes.
Crickets.
Coming. Mate, I've got to admit, I grew up... Summer felt like summer when the cricket was on in the background.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I'm not that anticipating of the cricket. Mm. And I don't know if that's just because I don't watch much telly anymore or because Ricky Ponting's not there anymore, but mate, I'm just not that into it anymore. So, hey, get yourself a copy of the Money Mag.
Yes.
Sounds a little bit what's the word?
Pumping up your own tires.
I wrote the cover story, but it's Why Negative Gearing Still Works. And, you know, it gives you a bit of... winter's here, and I've written about that.
Yep.
One thing I will note is that because we do this so much, Ben, there is an error. So
not an error, it's just a clarification point.
I could have written a label of a column better than I did.
Yes.
And it's a bit like Where's Wally, so I encourage you to go out and get a copy and check it out. But in the table, we put the loan amount, and it should be the net
debt.
Because in the copy, it talks about how it's interest-only loans.
Yes.
But we've got a loan that's reducing.
A global debt that's reducing.
So people are going, what? So, you know, just check that out, net debt. But I'd be interested in your feedback. Let us know on the Property Couch if you agree, disagree.
If you've read it.
On all those sorts of things. So
all on our social.
And as always, thank you to Effie and Maria and the team at Money for giving us the opportunity to contribute our thoughts and our views on that, which has been terrific.
Sounds good.
It is. Okay, my Mindset Minute theme today has been, have you ever heard of Wayne Dyer?
I have heard of Wayne Dyer.
Yeah, he's that mindset, New Age spiritualist.
Yep.
He wrote a book, You'll See It When You Believe It,
mm.
which is the spin on, you know, what you think it is. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yep.
And ideally, it just demonstrates that through belief, you can make your life anything, you know, you want it to be.
I love that idea.
And I remember at the time of picking up that book, I read it. I was in my late teens, early 20s when I first read it. And it was a real mindset shift because it just sounded wrong. You'll see it when you believe it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to a little shout out to you, Ben. You didn't see this coming, but on Saturday night we celebrated our 10-year celebration with Empower Wealth, and it was a terrific day. We went and saw the Book of Mormon as a team with all the partners, and we went to the MCG and saw some really cool stuff and had a really great dinner with an awesome view. And what I said to you on the night, Ben, and I'll say to the listeners, is that 10 years...
We don't have to do this. For
10 years is actually... most businesses don't get past 5. But the point here, Iverson, you'll see the segue, is that Ben had actually seen that night in his mind prior to us turning up there. In fact, he's actually seen what the 15-year and the 20-year celebration looks like already in his mind. So the thing is that he's walked it. You'll see it when you believe it. So he's believed it first, and then it came to fruition, which was a credit to him. But
I'm a little bit crazy.
But this podcast, Ben.
Yes.
We saw it.
Yes, you saw it.
In our minds.
And let's flip that on your head. You were the one that said...
Well, you're on board with the fact that...
I love that.
There's a new way of getting information out there, and it's without a sales agenda, and it's just empowering people.
That's in the data. We're about to have a look at that too.
We are about to have a look at that. So the podcast was something that we saw first before we believe it. We're now approaching close to 3 million
you saw
downloads.
It, not me.
And, you know, there wasn't that many people. You know, our good friend Kevin Turner had a real estate talk.
Yes.
He was there before us, but not a lot of people had treaded the path before us. So,
well, it's just great that you've got on-demand content that allows people to get educated, and that's what it's all about.
So there you go, folks. My Mindset Minute theme today is you'll see it when you believe it. You've got to internally see it first and believe it in your own mind before it comes to fruition. So for anyone who wants to build a portfolio, Ben, They've got to see it first in their mind before they'll see it in reality.
Well, we talk about making the invisible visible in terms of when you're actually doing this and you're putting it back into the fundamental context, clarify, evaluate, plan, implement, manage. And then when you're talking about asset selection, borrowing power, cash flow management and defense, you start to investigate these things. And as you do investigate them, you have visuals on them. And you know, in our business, we also talk about bridging the gap. It's bridging the gap of understanding. And so you're building that bridge of the journey you're going on, and you're putting all of these pillars and foundations in place so you can actually see it. And if you think you then can see it, because it's the same in terms of we believe that we can help people because we've got a vast level of knowledge, and we put it into a framework that allows people to do that. So whether you're doing a DIY, which is what all this is all about, or whether you seek professional guidance in that space, that to me is about, you know, basically seeing it and then believing it. You know, so that's the way I look at it.
Okay, so you did hint on the fact that we're going to drill down a bit on some data today.
Yes.
The PIPA survey, the annual PIPA survey came out, and we're going to dissect that. But before we do, Ben, I just thought it'd be a good opportunity. Some of our listeners might not know what PIPA is.
Or stands for.
The role that it plays. That, you know, regular listeners know that you're the chair and you have been for many years. But it might be worth just sort of, what place does PIPA have in the market?
So PIPA stands for the Property Investment Professionals of Australia. And that is effectively the peak association for businesses that operate in the property investment space. Now, for long-term listeners, you know that we're trying to advocate for professional standards and regulation in our industry. If we can get property investment regulated, it'll increase the level of professionalism. But that's a government thing. And we've been lobbying hard for the government to basically regulate property investment advice. Now, in the absence of that, in a way, PIPA, I mean, I don't want to really use this term, but PIPA's a bit of like the sheriff. So what we've said is all of the serious businesses, the businesses that believe in looking after their clients, are members of PIPA, where they put the client first. And the reason for that is PIPA has developed a code of conduct. And it's basically a set of principles in which the members need to operate under. So that code is a bit like our rap sheet around the regulation. What we need to do, rap sheet's not the right one because that says we're not wrong words, but it's basically the framework in which we want our members to look after their clients. And because look, the reality is there are a lot of spruikers out there. There's a lot of hype and hyperbole around what's sort of happening out in the marketplace. So this is, brings it back to basics. And you know, some of the big ones are continual education of the members. Also, you know, making sure that they're qualified in the areas that they say that they're qualified in, and finally about disclosure of commissions. So the disclosure of commissions is really a big one for us, because if you're going to charge a fee, well, then the consumer knows directly what that is. But in the property industry, there are a lot of commissions, soft dollar, kickbacks, referral payments, and that's okay as long as they're disclosed, because, you know, basically the consumer can then make an informed decision of whether they see value in that. So if people are saying, I've got a free service, you don't pay, I get paid by somebody else, fine, just make sure that you understand what that amount is. And so in all other areas, like in the mortgage broking area now, all of those commissions are disclosed. In terms of insurances, in financial services, they're all disclosed. So regulation has made their way into credit. It's obviously been in the financial services space for a long time. So PIPA is all about building the professional standards inside the property investment space.
And so you guys do an annual survey. What's the agenda? What's the bigger picture of why you do that?
Yeah, so the survey's been running now for 4 years. So we've done it 3 years independently. And what it is just we just want to get a snapshot of the sentiment in the marketplace each year. So we're consistent in terms of sending the questionnaire out, and we asked obviously our listeners to help fill the survey in a couple of months ago, and now all that data's been collated. So we try and do that survey in that sort of August-September period, and that's what we've got, and effectively we get a sense of what the marketplace is telling us at that time.
All right, so folks, we're gonna dissect it and let you know what the survey results came up with. And I think there's some pretty good insights, but for our long-term listeners, Ben, I think it'll be a few confirmation signals here.
Well, it's again, you know, if we start with the first question of how many properties, you know, do you have in your portfolio, we actually see here that over 60% of those who responded have actually got two or more investment properties. Now, that tells us that we're actually talking to more sophisticated investors. So rather than just going out to the blanket Australian community, this survey has been dispatched by obviously the PIPA members to all of their client base. So we are getting more of a flavoured opinion around you know, what the marketplace is telling us from more experienced type operators, Bryce.
So have you purchased investment property in the past 12 months? Was pretty close to even. Yes was 47% and no was 53%. So we've got a bit of a mix there as well.
Yep, so we've got active people in here as well. If you think about it, one in two are pretty much active. So that tells us a lot. If so, was this your first investment property that you've ever purchased? And the answer to that was, again, because of the balance. So effectively, three quarters said 74% said no. And you know, but it's good to see the new arrivals in there, so a quarter of them buying their first investment property.
Yeah, and interestingly, that's 73% usually stop at one, so it's flipped that on its head.
It has completely flipped on. And that's why, again, that means that what we're about to sort of tell you about what this survey is indicating to us is that these are sophisticated, or that they're experienced. I wouldn't say completely fully sophisticated, but experienced investors.
But where the benefit is for the listener, as you know, Ben, is just that, you know, stand on the shoulder of giants, success leaves clues.
Oh, yeah, totally.
If you understand what the experienced people are doing, it'll help our listeners, I guess, edify whatever path they're on.
So if this was your first investment property, you've ever purchased, what did you buy?
This is encouraging.
This is encouraging. So again, success leaves good. An existing established property was 79%.
Yeah.
Now again, if I think to our PIPA database of our members, you know, we still have developers and builders and those alike, but we do have a lot of larger members who have a lot of experience in the property investment space. And I would suspect, you know, businesses like Margaret's Destiny, Damien Collins, Momentum Wealth, Steve Wright Property Group, those types of operators, David McMillan from Property Success, those types of businesses are all, you know, helping people buy property, and most of them are buying established property. But good sign.
We always talk about so the next question says, do you believe now is a good time to invest in residential property? We always talk about the fact that when's the next best time for you to buy? When your cash flows allow. So you've got a sophisticated group of people saying, do you believe now is a good time to invest in property? Almost 70, just a tick under 70%, 7 out of 10 people say yes.
And that is interesting. And look, a lot of the media picked up on that. You know, so I've done a few interviews, Sky News, and also a lot of the media, trade media as well. this is obviously a big part of the awareness campaign we do for PIPA. So, you know, 70% of people. So, again, this is a confidence piece telling the market that even though in some areas, and we're going to see that later in the data in terms of looking at Sydney's popularity at the moment, that's down. But it says to us that they play the long game. And they still are confident about the marketplace.
So the next couple of questions, are you looking to purchase an investment property in the next 6 to 12 months? And if so, what type of property would you buy? Again, a very high percentage said yes in the next 6 to 12 months at 60, just a bit over 61%.
Yep.
But the type of property they would buy, interestingly, for the experienced, is a house.
Yeah.
67%.
I mean, daylight between that and the other responses. So the next opportunities were townhouse villa, and then unit apartment. So townhouse villa, 9.5%. Unit apartment, 9.3%. And then house and land package is 2%. And a little bit, you know, number two is actually unsure. So the unsure piece for me there is, well, I don't know yet until I start doing my research.
Mm-mm.
And that's okay. But the vast majority are saying that they want land as part of that. So, you know, that's a good news story there as well.
It's a sophisticated group of people that we're surveying. So one thing to keep in mind here, Ben, is, you know, even though the townhouse, the villa, the unit, the apartment are down lower as a percentage, that's okay for people if that's all they can afford in terms of just making sure they buy in the best suburbs and then buying with scarcity and owner-occupier appeal. But so it doesn't necessarily mean you should avoid the others, but clearly there's a strong weight. If they've got the resources, they've got the equity, and they can afford to buy a house, they'll want to do that.
And then it rolls into, you know, would you buy existing or established, brand new off the plan or vacant land? Now, again, daylight between existing and established, 92%, brand new off the plan, 5.3%, and then vacant land, 2.5%. So
any listener who has just come onto the Property Couch in the last few episodes, Ben, and has not heard our back catalogue, key clue here.
Yes.
Key success clue here. Some sophisticated or experienced investors are buying established existing properties.
And why do we think that is, Bryce? I mean, because this is what we're on about. We think, you know, the resale history is a good indicator of its historical performance. And, you know, if you back test or do some regression analysis on that back testing, usually properties perform relatively consistent over time in the more established areas. So you've got a little bit more safety in that, in respect of, you know, those things versus, and there's, you know, there's obviously greater scarcity if you're coming closer in. So they're the little things that we've been going on about in our podcast around practicality tests, livability, you know, owner-occupier appeal. That also resonates in terms of the data that we're seeing here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is interesting because it's not so, well, there's two clear standouts, but why invest in property rank in order of importance? One being the most important, six being the least important. The options were short-term price growth, renovating for profit, long-term capital growth, short-term cash flow, long-term rental, and short-term tax benefits. Good to report that the least one was the tax benefits, which is what we
talk about. Yep, but don't invest for negative gearing.
But the number one was long-term capital growth, followed secondly by long-term rental.
Yeah, so the passive income. So number one, 63% says long-term growth. Number two was passive income. Interestingly, they reversed themselves for number two and number one, you know, because we're obviously ranking them in order. So there's clearly daylight between them. And then renovating for profit comes in at number three when we start to sort of flesh out the preferences for those who were surveyed. So 742 responses there.
Yeah, so that makes sense. You know, growth is what you get out of the market. Rent's what keeps you in the market. So yeah, that's kind of...
And there's nothing wrong with adding value.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of three pillars, I suspect, in terms of what that looks like.
Thanks to the block. I think renovating for profit's always up there.
So the next one, this one here, where is the most appealing place to buy right now? So the opportunities were regional markets, metropolitan markets, coastal locations, or mining towns.
Well,
what did we get?
Mining towns. That's a hairline graph there.
Two people said yes to mining towns.
Yes, okay.
Not even 1%, but...
Maybe they should reach out to a Pippa rep.
There could be opportunity. You never know. Mm-hmm. They may have some insights that the rest of us don't have. There's always opportunity in all markets. So...
If you think about northwestern Australia, just an example, that stuff's fully bottomed out. Yep. So yep. If someone might see an opportunity there, who knows?
Well, we're definitely seeing areas like Karratha and that are actually on the radar of some research analysts right now. So that tells us that, you know, that there could be opportunities in those markets when you're picking the bottom.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you are going to invest in those markets, now's a better time than when the taxi driver's giving you advice to be there.
Correct. So metropolitan markets, clearly, you know, almost...
No surprise there.
You know, almost three quarters, you know, 7 out of 10, and then regional markets, 15%. Coastal locations around 12%. So
that reasonably reflects what we do as a team with my buyer's agency team here. That kind of reflects the numbers. We're in all those markets. We're not in mining towns, but we're buying in some select regional markets. We're buying select coastal locations and metropolitan markets. So it does reflect on the ground what we're doing.
And this one is also the one that the media loves to get their hands on.
Yes.
In which state capital do you believe currently offers the best investment prospects?
Everyone answered this one.
Drum roll.
Brizzy.
Briz Vegas.
Price disparity is pretty strong there. But what's good, price disparity between Brisbane and Sydney. But
yes,
what's interesting is Melbourne is right up there too.
Yep, clearly.
Brisbane is at 42% of respondents and Melbourne at 32%. But I think that's reflective. I mean, we're still buying in Melbourne, and we're still the price disparity between Sydney and Melbourne is still pretty strong.
Well, if we talk about our DSR, so demand supply ratio, we're actually seeing an uplift in Melbourne at the moment in terms of, so we track obviously every, we track the top 50 population centres across Australia religiously every month, and we're actually seeing...
Thank you, Location School.
Yes, thank you, Location School. We're actually seeing an uplift in regards to Melbourne's activity. Mm. So there might be not just a flick in the tail might wag the dog in this one in terms of going a bit longer. And we're seeing areas in that sort of middle ring and the outer suburbs that are established also, you know, performing really, really well. Now, in Sydney, we saw that 2 or 3 years ago, where basically the rising tide lifted the whole ship. Well, Melbourne's starting to see those more affordable markets in that sort of 400 to 600 performing really, really well at the moment.
Mm. So next one is, does your property investment or your combined portfolio generate positive income or negative cash flow right now? No surprise that negative cash flow is out in front, but the positive is not that far behind. You know,
that was the reason why I put this particular question into the survey, because I wanted people to understand that not everyone is in the accumulation or negatively geared phase of their portfolio. Mm. There's actually a good portion there. You know, 4 out of every 10 effectively have a positive positive portfolio. So that to me says that, you know, again, about sophistication, once I accumulate enough, I then pay the debt out and the property portfolio starts to provide that passive income.
You'd have been itching for the journalists at that point to really pick up on that point, wouldn't you? So they would report that.
Yeah,
it's not negative gearing forever. It's just a moment in time. I'm sure they didn't.
No, well, we've got some negative gearing questions coming up. So here they are. If negative, how long until you expect them to turn positively geared or, to generate positive income? So from that point of view, you can see here that what I was then asking is, okay, so for those who were negative, which was around 6 in every 10, how many before they actually turn up to be positive? Now, the interesting sign for that is 1 to 3 years and 4 to 5 years effectively makes up over half of that story. So we're then sort of saying within the next 5 years, these people are expecting their portfolio to start providing weekly cash
flow. Tax revenue.
Yep. So, and tax revenue for the government. Mm. Well put, Bryce.
So there we go. Did you get Scott Morrison ringing you to discuss these results?
I want to spend a moment also, just there's a little other little theme that's coming through the survey, having looked through it. There's 12% that said unsure.
Yeah.
Now, that does tell me that there are still people who are filling surveys in, and there's a little bit more evidence of this in a minute. They're unsure because they're not doing their numbers. Mm. So that says to me, hey guys, we've got to get more education out there. We've got to basically make sure, and that comes into the questions around, are they planning to become what they plan to become? So we'll pick up on that theme. So 12% of people didn't know whether their, you know, portfolio was going to be positive or negative and when it was going to be positive.
Well, they won't know that, you know, when's the best time to buy your next property. Correct. When your cash flow allows.
They won't know.
Need help.
That's why the numbers are there.
The next one is, using the below scale, which one of these statements best describes your situation? My investment property portfolio of properties generates a passive income. B, I can easily afford to cover any cash flow shortfall at the moment. C, I can comfortably cover any cash flow shortfall at the moment. D, I can cover the current cash flow shortfall, but my cash flows are tight. Or E, I'm having trouble covering the cash flow shortfall at the moment. Ben, the winner is?
Well, the winner was basically, I can comfortably cover any cash flow shortfall at the moment. So that's a good thing. I mean, that's how we want everyone to be. But what's interesting about that is it's a 33-34%. Then I can easily cover is 28%. My investment portfolio generates positive income. That was 21%. And then I can cover the current cash flow shortfall, but my cash flows are tight, 15. So this is where we were talking about everyone getting in and not sort of seeing the situation. And I'm having trouble was 1%. But I'd like to think that more people are really comfortable in being able to cover their portfolio.
Well, you think about that, 16% are in the tight or worse. Mm. So 84% of experienced investors
are on top of it, which is good to know. And you'd like to think if they've had their advice from their PIPA representative that that would be the case.
Okay, so here's a big one, so I'll rip through it. What is currently the biggest concern for you as a property investor? Here's the options. Changes to negative gearing tax laws, 1. 2, changes to capital gains tax exemption laws, 3. Being ripped off by a property spruiker, 4. A big correction in property prices, 5. Further tightening of investor lending, 6. Falling rental yields, 7. Banks raising interest rates on investment properties, 8. Long periods of vacancy, and 9. Oversupply of new property,
And the number one most ranked at 32%, 32.5% further tightening of investor lending. I think that's...
Yep, and there's a bit of a theme there because also banks raising interest rates on investment.
It's so closely second.
That's closely second at 16 or 17%. So you put those two together and we are more interested in how macroprudential changes are affecting us as opposed to anything else. Then we're interested in a correction in the cycle.
Mm. Let's fast forward to the least concerning one,
yeah.
Being ripped off by a spruiker. So again, people who...
Who get advice,
yeah.
Don't feel that sort of way inclined. If we were asking the bigger market, the broader market, I reckon that spruiker question would have some more legs.
Yeah, if you think about it, being ripped off by a spruiker is largely a first, not always, but largely a first-time investor susceptibility.
Yeah, it happens to you the first time around. They come out to your house.
Yeah.
So we can make this happen for you. Do you have $25 in your family budget that you can put aside to buy? Oh, there I go. All right. Have recent proposals and lobbying by the Labor and Green parties to ban negative gearing and reduce capital gains tax exemptions, along with changes to investment deduction allowances, caused you to put your investment plans on hold? Nice long-winded question, but I needed to get the Greens and the Labor Party in there for that one.
Yeah. Well, mate, it's the troops have spoken.
Yep.
It's clear.
No. They're just getting on with it.
75, 3 out of 4 people? No. Let's just get on with it. I read in the article, Ben, there's been a GFC, there's been an Asian crisis, there was GST introduced in 2000, they've removed negative gearing. This too shall pass. This stuff's been done before. If you've got a long-range view, some of this stuff doesn't tend to worry you.
But we don't want the politicians to misread that. In terms of if they see that and they say, well, it doesn't affect anyone, so we're going to remove it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't affect anyone. No.
No, it does.
We're still going in the business of property, okay? And we still expect, it's not the reason we go into the business, but when we go into a business, if we've got costs of running that business, we expect those costs to be deductible, especially the interest cost of getting into the business, because we are also playing a role. In other words, mum and dad investors are also playing a role in moving the economy forward, in creating jobs. In direct and indirect jobs that we're creating. So don't take that as a mandate that no one cares about negative gearing. We care about the concept because we've invested a lot of money, and those who are about to invest in property need to have an understanding of the game. And we're seeing what's happening in, you know, the energy markets at the moment. The reason why there's no investment and we've got a potential risk of blackouts over summer is because there is no policy. You know, the policy has been shifting and changing, and that's meant that no one's willing to invest. The same thing will happen if you start playing with the fundamentals that have been involved in the property market for a long time.
Well said, sir. Well said. So we've got quite a few questions to rip through here, Ben. So let's rip through this one. Has concern around a property price bubble caused you to put investment plans on hold? Kind of related to the previous one.
Yep.
No.
So basically, 3/4 were no. That gives you an idea.
Which of the following best describes you as a property investor? I'm totally opportunistic and don't work to an investment plan. 2, I have a rough idea of what I want to achieve, but I don't have a set investment plan. 3, I have a fair idea of my investment plans for the next 5 years or so. 4, I have a set strategy that I'm working towards for the long term, but I don't have it fully modelled or in a detailed written plan. And 5, I have a detailed model plan in writing to match my long-term property investment goals. It's pretty even, well, with the exception of one.
Yeah, but what this tells me, if I dig a little deeper and contemplate this idea, I would want to see everyone have a detailed plan.
Mm.
I mean, you know, you're going into a business of $1 million or a couple of $1 million and you don't have a business plan.
Mm.
You know, and the fact that, you know, I have a detailed model plan in writing to match my long-term investment goals, only 20%.
Yeah.
So, you know, sort of just doesn't sort of make sense to me. 1 in 5 are saying I'm good for that, but the rest are sort of saying, a rough idea. So that's good enough for me. Yeah. I mean, if you don't invest with a rough idea,
mm-hmm.
not that sort of money. You might invest, say, $500 with a rough idea. That's called a roughie, you know. But the reality is, I'd like to see that number improve.
There's the goal for next year. Let's see if we can get that done.
Yeah, let's see if we can get that number up.
Yeah. So, which professionals have you sought services from in the past? There's a whole range of them, Ben. Mortgage broker, accountant, lawyer, conveyancer, property investment advisor, property marketer, seller, financial planner, buyer's agent, property manager, property investment coach. I haven't sought advice and other. I haven't sought advice and other is probably on
7-8% in total.
Yep.
So that says to us, good. Mm. That means that a lot of people are seeking advice, and it's clear they love their mortgage brokers, they love their property managers, they love their lawyers and conveyancers. So they're all good things.
Well, the respondents, anything over more than 50% was property manager, lawyer, conveyancer, accountant, and mortgage broker.
Yep.
So I'd probably just say maybe put a pitch in there that you, for asset selection being critical, you probably want to engage a reputable and experienced and trusted buyer's agent.
Yep, which was sitting at 40%. Mm. So it's definitely growing, which is a good news story. And I'd love to see property investment advice sitting around 40% as well, also grow if you're seeking professional advice.
Well done. Where have you sought? Where do you plan to seek property investment advice from?
So that was the past. Category? Now we're sort of asking into the future.
So my little pitch worked because almost 60% said a buyer's agent or a buyer's advocate. So that's pleasing. And for you, property investment advisors climbed.
Yeah, I like to see that also. You know, I want to be that to be about 80%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, make the plan up, work out what you can afford, and then go and get your, there's your plan, and go and get it implemented through a VA. So build your A team out, mortgage broker in there as well, accountant in there as well. So that is your A team. Make sure it happens for you, and then you'll be better served.
All right, so where do you get your property investment knowledge education from? Here are the options: professional advisors, research data providers, internet searches, media, YouTube, podcasts, webinars, seminars, books, online forums, friends and family, property or investment exhibitions. Oh, Ben.
This has been a standout and interesting for us. But number one comes in as property source and advisors. Property professional sources. So that's great news, and we'd like to see more of that happening. Number two.
Stiggy. Hey, that's got everything to do with you.
Ibis.
Mate, podcasts. Yes.
So that's been a big lift. And again, what's great about that is people have podcasts on demand so they can drive to work. If they're exercising, riding, doing whatever, they have some spare time, they can put a podcast on and build knowledge.
My goal for a podcast, Ben, is to create awareness for Gen Xers and maybe baby boomers, because the millennials and Ys are all over it, because they're all over their smartphones and they're quite happy to download podcasts. But as you, and you know, a lot of the people that write into us are millennials, but if we can get more early Xers and baby boomers to listen to more podcasts, I think that...
I think it's taken off. Podcasts in general are now sort of starting to hit mainstream. Mm. They weren't there for a long time. But the other one I also like in here, number three, was data research providers. So if you look at those rankings, so it's about getting the data. The data is the first place you start to look. Okay, so get your knowledge, but to obviously implement the knowledge, you've got to know where to buy. And so those data sources are obviously really important as well.
Well said. Property. What is your property investment exit strategy? Hold and never sell. Sell down some/all. Live off the equity. Unsure at this stage. Looks like people want to pass it on to the heirs, Ben.
Yeah, they do. Which is nice. I mean, there's the legacy piece. Mm. So, you know, hold and never sell. That's, you know, these are, again, people who are, success leaves clues. They're telling us no. Some of them are saying I might sell some down, and that's okay. So, you know, if you build up three or four, you can sell one down. Live off the equity. That's an aggressive strategy, and it's good to see it's only 6%. The other one, again, I want to see more people a bit more confident around what their strategy is. And so if they're unsure at this stage, which was around sort of 17-18%,
that was close to ranking second too. Yeah. So yeah, so you're right, you want to see that a bit
more. We want to see a bit more of that.
How did you secure your last investment loan? Directly from a bank, A. B, directly from a credit union, C, through a mortgage broker, D, other. What's my ABCD? E, paid cash. Good news here, Ben.
Nice to see 18 people paid cash for their investment property. Good
on them. I'll take Andrew Bogart off, so it's 17.
Then, clear winner. I mean, through a mortgage broker. What does that tell you? That, I've been saying this on a lot of the media that I've been doing is a mortgage broker is someone who is in tune with choice and in tune with strategy and structure. So they have the ability to, you know, think a couple of steps ahead. You say it all the time, and that's a clear winner. Just absolutely
investment savvy mortgage broker.
And look, some of the banks are still doing okay at 20%, but you know, daylight between mortgage broker and other.
So in a sort of a related question, how do you intend to secure finance for your next investment loan? No change from the previous mortgage broker.
82%. So that is a big number, like 8 out of 10 are going to use a broker into the future.
Have recent changes to lenders investor lending policies impacted your ability to secure finance for an investment property? Yes, no, unsure.
New question into the survey, because we want to gauge how the impact of the macroprudential regulation has changed. And the reality is, yeah, it's moving. So we had it for the last couple of years since the changes have come in from APRA. So it went from 32% to 43% this year. Mm-hmm. So it's biting. So APRA, the work you're doing, and then obviously then interest-only lending and all of those things, the work you're doing is having an effect, and it's slowing down people's ability to buy multiple properties quickly.
And another related question, given lenders are charging higher interest rates for interest-only loans, do you intend to switch to principal and interest, to principal and interest repayments? The highest was no at 36%.
Now, again, some people who need to get on top of their money situation and their cash flow situation, 28% for unsure. Guys, you've got to do your numbers.
Yeah.
So make sure you get out there and speak to your mortgage broker and crunch those numbers. The 36% is pleasing for me. And I'm going to sit down with Joel in our team, and I'm actually going to do a couple of examples of where interest only is trumping P&I.
Cool.
Okay, just in terms of overall strategy, because you'd think logically that if if you could get a cheaper cost of funds by going P&I, you would do that. So just watch out for that.
How will the listeners be able to tap into that?
Just give me a few weeks for that to come together, because we're obviously
watch this space.
We're going overseas later this month, so I'll be offline for a couple of weeks. So it's just important that keep an eye out for that, because we'll have that by the end of the year in terms of demonstrating interest only versus principal and interest in an overall strategy build.
We're 18 hours on a flight together, Ivis. Maybe you and Ben can sit together. Do our listeners know, which we should tell the listeners, that Ivis is already, because she's on the plane with us for 18 hours, she's reached out to the travel agent, made sure she's not sitting anywhere near us.
Oh, is that right?
She's got 2 or 3 seats ahead of us.
Well, we're planning. Isn't that a planning time?
Yeah, we're going to work the whole time.
We're off to a customer service conference over in the US to just basically continue to build our knowledge in that space, because we are still students as well. So we're heading over
Stiggy,
to the States.
Stiggy doesn't want to hang out with us. That's the bottom line. what is the next question? Given the current interest rate you're paying, at what interest rate differential would you consider refinancing your loans? All right, there's a fair few differential percentages here, but Ben, in the interest of time, let's go straight to the chase.
I can summarise it by saying that if there's a 50%, so 50 basis points different, basically a quarter of people would shop around. If that differential moved to 1%, you're effectively saying half of those people would then go and refinance their mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's telling you that if you want to have competitive, or you want to drive business, lenders who are listening, if you want to drive business, make sure you've got a sharp interest rate for your property investor community, and you will potentially pick up some business.
I don't care what interest rate I pay was one of the responses, Ben.
Yes, I know.
32 people do not care.
That's good. They understand the game.
Given the lending service, I'll keep reading because I'm a bit quicker. Yeah.
Good.
Given the lending serviceability changes over the past 2 years, do you currently find yourself in a position where you're unable to refinance an amount which you were able to borrow previously? Ben, the winner is?
No, so that's good. We know that they don't. But again, if I actually combine unsure at 27%, it's the second biggest number.
Yeah.
So what is this telling me about people? You still aren't on top of your numbers.
Mm.
So it might be good that, so that's an underlying theme for me, that sophisticated cash flow management is still missing. And that's obviously what I'm passionate about. So we need to do more work in that space, Bryce.
Victor Kumar has a property date every Sunday. Maybe those people need a property date.
Well, just get a cash flow story together in terms of what that looks like for your household.
Do you think it's fair that property investors have to pay higher interest rates compared to owner-occupiers? Wow, this knocked me over with a feather. Cannot believe the answer to this.
Did I load that question up?
What do you reckon, listeners?
70%.
70% said, no, it's not fair.
But interesting enough, basically 25%. So we have these mum and dads who are actually genuinely altruistic in a sense, because they're sort of saying, you know what? Yeah, look, maybe. I don't mind. I'm making money. This is a classic.
Bought my first investment property in 99. That was back then, that was normal, that there was a differential between owner-occupied investors.
That's right.
Well, it's part of the conditioning. How are we going, Ivers?
Yeah, we're doing all right.
No, next question. Given lenders are raising interest rates out of cycle with the RBA's cash rate, are you considering fixing your interest rates for some or all of your loans? Almost 50%, Ben, 49% said yes.
Yes. So, and you would expect, you know, again, having understanding around your cash flow is a good thing if cash flow's tight.
Mm.
So, you know, lock your numbers in when you need to lock those numbers in.
Still a bit unhappy with the 20%
unsure. 20%. So that gives, again, that's leaving us clues that people need to be better.
Sophisticated investors, Ben, or experienced investors, were asked this question. Have you invested in property via a self-managed super fund? Wow.
No.
86%.
Yeah. It's just clearly that there is still not a strong appetite for buying properties through self-managed super funds. And I don't mind that because self-managed super funds aren't for everyone. They're sophisticated instruments. So it's important to understand that, you know, that that's a good sign to say that not everyone's being spruced into setting up a self-managed super fund.
And the next question asks it on the opposite way. Are you planning to invest in a property via your SMSF in the next 12 months? And the answer is almost identical. No, 85%.
I was a yes in that one.
Well, yep.
There we go. Yep.
There you go. Kingsley.
But I'm sophisticated, so I should know what I'm doing, hopefully.
Oh, well, in some areas, not 40 yeah. 40 teams.
Definitely not selections. In football teams. No,
in general, do you think property investors need more... Do you think investors need more investment education about the risks and potential benefits of investing in property? Experienced investors have overwhelmingly responded, Ben, in the positive.
In the positive. 84% have told us, yes, we do need more education. Well, that's what we're here to do.
And another related question. Do you think any person providing information or advice on investing in property should at the very least have some level of formal property investment training or education? Dun, dun, dun. 93% of the people said yes.
Now, can I take a moment to put my PIPA hat on?
Put it on.
Remember, PIPA is a non-for-profit association. So if you're a listener out there and you're in the property investment space, check out our Qualified Property Investment Advisor course. It will give you that baseline education that you need to understand how you look after an external customer. It's all right in terms of how you've done it yourself, but when you're playing with other people's money, you need to understand the responsibilities that you have and to be educated around giving investment advice. That course is well worth checking out. You can go to the PIPA website, pipa.asn.au. And if you're interested to learn more about that, reach out to our membership officer, Nicole Sant, and she will tell you more about those opportunities. And again, for businesses out there, if you're not a member of PIPA and you believe in putting the client first, then you should be a member of
PIPA. How do they get in contact with Nicole?
So they can get in contact with Nicole by going to the PIPA website and just basically filling in the inquiry form and reaching out, and we'll get in contact with them.
Nicole will chat to them, talk them through it, all the stuff.
Exactly.
She'll get through all the stuff. Yes. Hey, Rachel. Rachel Cole, she emailed me yesterday. For those listeners who haven't heard Rachel, she was on during August. She's actually doing the course herself.
She is doing a QPIA course.
Ripped through the first module, and she's on fire to finish the next few modules. So.
And you've only got one module to go, haven't you?
I have only got one module to go. I do. Thank you for reminding me of that. That's true.
We'll get that done.
I'm going to do it with Rachel. So there, Rachel, if you listen to this, we'll finish it together.
Beautiful.
But notwithstanding, I'm a big fan of PIPA.
Well, but don't forget, you're also a buyer's agent, and you're qualified and licensed in that area. Mm-hmm. You're just randing out your skill sets. Everything's there. It's just a matter of completing your course.
I hang around with the guru, mate. It rubs off, you know.
Well,
the old mate over here.
Yeah. And for those who, again, have got years and years of experience, there is recognised prior learning that you can also apply for as well. So reach out to Nicole if you're interested.
Accountability Partners listeners, I will get that finished. So thank you very much. Do we read this question?
Property investment should be regulated?
We
haven't done that one yet. Yeah. 90% say yes. So there's, again, success leaves clues.
90%.
We need to have regulation government.
Would you consider rent vesting as a property investment strategy? Rent vesting means renting in one location and investing in another.
And the answer to that is, it's a growing number here.
62.
So we've got 62% of people saying that rent vesting is a possibility for them.
Yes. Are you aware there is a peak not-for-profit professional association for those working in the property investment industry called PIPA? This sounds like one penned by your good self, Ben.
Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously, that's because we reached out to the databases, but more people need to know about Pippa, and that's what we've also done in this story.
Okay, so...
finishing off.
So, 40, what is your home state and territory? Interestingly, we've got a lot of people on the East Coast, Ben, but we want to shout out to any of our non-East Coast listeners for next year. We want to get you involved.
Correct. More people involved. So, 46 New South Wales, 30% in Victoria. Then we had Queensland coming in at 11, and then WA at 5 and a bit percent, and then the rest other. So thank you, everyone.
We want to hear from your Northern Territory. We want to hear from your Tasmania. We want to hear from your Canberra. Come on, South Australia. Let us know what you're thinking next year. What is your age, Benjamin?
Yeah, so the number, my age is 46. In terms of, so 36 to 45 was our biggest number. Mm-hmm. So that's a good news story. And then 46 to 55, just 20%. So 36% in 36 to 45. 46 to 55 was just under 20%. And then we have the, I missed one, my bad. Coming in at number two was actually 26 to 35 at 31%. So that cluster, and then obviously the elders, but anyone under 25, not quite getting into the property space, that makes sense to us as well.
Makes sense. That's good. And the last one.
You can download this too, by the way. You can download this.
Well, they'll do it by going to Facebook, Ben.
They can.
They'll go to Facebook, The Property Couch.
Yep, and we'll send them the link to the Pippa website to download it.
Yep. Beautiful. So, okay. So we'll get them to like, we'll get them to join Pippa. Everyone will be well and truly ready for next year, Ben. Last question.
Yep.
It's the one everyone wants to know, and I can't believe we've done it so quickly, Ivis. Hey? She shakes her head. What is your annual household income? The bell curve is well and truly at play here, Ben.
Yeah, it's not. It's really clear. It's clear to us that, you know, income's between $100,000 and effectively $200,000, which is where the most, you know, dual household incomes are sitting. So it's consistent. This is not for the multi-rich, you know, not even close. These are mum and dad investors who are making a way for their families.
A message to the politicians. It's not the uber wealthy that are negative gearing.
No.
It is the people who are trying to self-fund their retirement on average household incomes, trying to get ahead. And we also know that they eventually turn positive, Ben.
Well, they do. So there you go.
There we go. So, folks, hope you got some insights there. You can compare it to yourself, see what some of the others are doing. It's always nice to compare ourselves to others when we're doing something that's a little outside of the box compared to some of your mates and some of your work colleagues. Again, Ben, if they want to download that, go to Facebook at The Property Couch. There'll be a link over to the Pippa website there.
Beautiful.
Which is great. Hey, for me, my life hack.
Yep.
You'll love this, Ben. It's for the listeners who are parents, right?
Yes.
Embrace the adult scooter. All right.
Embrace the adult scooter.
Yeah, yeah. Because
take the kids for a scoot.
Well, because as you know, on Tuesday mornings, instead of facing the traffic, I'm scooting down the road with the boys. Sometimes with Andrea, but it's usually just me and the boys. We scoot Jack to school.
Oh, nice.
And they love it. But it's good. It's good for the headspace. It's good for connecting with the kids. It's good for exercise. My life hack is to embrace the adult scooter, Ivis. Andrea bought one. I pinched it off her. I've got this old rickety one when it's the four of us, but she's got this nice big sort of, and they're not expensive, Ben.
Yep.
Rolls Royce adult scooter so that we can go with the kids, and we use it all the time. So
love it.
That's my life hack, because you can get time with the kids, get out in the sunshine, clear your head, get some exercise. Boom. Let me know.
Brilliant. Did you know? I think we've done enough numbers and data, haven't we, today?
Yeah. No, I'm happy with that.
I'm obviously only disguising the fact that I haven't prepared anything. But now that we've got that out in the open to all the listeners.
Now that we've been truly authentic.
I think surely we've got enough information here, haven't we?
Yeah, well, yeah,
I think we do.
I gave you the did you know before anyway about old mate over here. She's decided not to sit with us on the
floor. I know. So. Well, that's what happens when she just... Because she knows that she's just going to get more work put on her plate if she sits next to us on the trip too.
So there you go. There you go, folks. Hopefully we got some intel there. Hey, we haven't asked for a little while, but part of the algorithm for iTunes, Ben, we don't know how it works. We know it's a combination of downloads and a combination of reviews. So just a message to our long-term listeners, not the new ones, though they're just trying to get to know us, but the long-term listeners who have got some benefit out of our podcast, if you wouldn't mind going to iTunes and actually giving us a review. Our hope would be that it would be higher on the star rating than lower.
But we'll let them totally make that decision. You. If you give us a one, you give us a one. Yes. We'll take it on the chin.
But you made a good point previously when we've asked this, Ben, is how do we actually do it? Mm. How did they do it?
Well, the new app makes it a lot easier now. Mm. So you can actually, you know, quickly click on the actual reviews.
And leave one.
Yeah, and just quickly leave one. Just actually hit the star ratings. So what that has meant is... there's about 420 reviews now.
Mm.
So that's brilliant.
Yeah, so the chase for Tim worked, obviously.
Yeah, we're now, over 400 now.
Now, a message to our new listeners who have joined our community. That review thing doesn't apply to you, but what I'd suggest is if you go back to the beginning, start from the beginning, put it at 1.5 times speed. The reason I say this over and over for the people who hear it all the time is because everyone reaches out to us and says, that's a really valuable tip, Ben.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good life hack. So that, because I reckon the first... 15 to 20 episodes that we did are just foundational.
They are foundation.
And yeah, you got to know those. So if you've just stumbled across us, a friend's referred you, you've stumbled across us on iTunes, go back to the beginning. It's well worth your time. Go 1.5 speed and you'll be able to get through that, which will be helpful. And for those of you who haven't got the Money Smarts system, I'd suggest you go and get it. Go to thepropertycouch.com.au. It's so easy. It's on the homepage. You can't miss it, Ben. But what it also means... is that we will send you notifications via email because we'll have your email address.
Yes, we will.
And we'll let you know who the guests are, what's coming up, what questions we've got. We're going to do some throwbacks to our life hacks. So you will get some huge benefits out
of it. Some bonus stuff that people who listen don't get.
Exactly. So go to our, if you're on the train or you're going for a walk now, just go to our homepage now. Ibis might even put a link in the show notes just to make sure it's nice and easy for you. Tap the photo on the podcast, Ben, that reveals all the show notes. You didn't know that about 10 episodes ago.
Wow.
And then we'll get you that Money Smarts. And the last thing is if you enjoy social media, at the Property Couch on all of the... on all of the portals, at Bryce Holdaway, at Ben Kingsley AU. And the final thing, Ben, we are going to be at the Sydney Property Buyer Expo.
We are.
You're talking about, is there any gaps in the amount of money you've got? Have you got enough to retire?
That's right. Your investment shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
Working out your investment shortfall.
Me and Jez are going to talk about property hotspots and how to do them yourself.
Great.
And we're also going to be doing a live episode of The Property Couch. So if anyone's in Sydney... we would love to meet you. Come to that audience. I think it's Saturday at 1:30 or 2 o'clock. 1:30, Ivis is saying. So come along. And if you want to check us out, Ben, and you need to keep as much money as you can in your offset account because you're following Money Smarts and you don't want to pay for a ticket, it's on us.
Free.
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 Put in the code.
Free.
Property Couch. And you will save yourself some coin. So go and do that. That'll be in the show notes too, Ben. So tap the photo on your podcast right now.
Oh,
The show notes will appear.
Tap the photo. I didn't know that, remember?
And you'll get...
no idea you can do that.
You will get the freebie on behalf of the Property Couch. Well, we covered a lot. So hopefully... it's been a while since it's just been me and you in the studio.
It's been a while, but that's... remember, you know, Bryce, knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it. And there's obviously a few insights there. Because people want to check themselves against others and see it. Well, that's what the survey has done in terms of getting the sentiment of the market.
And on behalf of people, we'll see you next year. We'll get those...
we'll get those out again next year.
And if you want a copy, that'll be in the show notes. But folks, until next week, see you later.